Today's episode is such a good one, ladies. We sat down with relationship expert and founder of KMA Therapy, Kimberly Moffitt. She has spent almost two decades working with couples. And so this conversation was honestly such a fun and different take on relationships because we got into things like sleep divorce, why it carries so much stigma. We talk about snoring. We talk about scrolling at 2 a.m., like all the things. And Kimberly was just so easy to talk with and so generous with her insights. I know that I walked away with a whole new perspective on my relationship. This episode is also part of our Reclaim Your Rest with ND Sleep series. And if you haven't heard the other episodes yet, I really suggest you go back and listen now because we have covered everything from why sleep falls apart in perimenopause to the sleep-weight connection, the science of deep sleep, and what to do if you're not sleeping. Sleep keeps showing up at the center of so many of the conversations we have on this podcast. And that's why we partnered with ND, because sleep is not just a small piece of the puzzle. This is perimenopause. So sleep is basically like the whole puzzle. And so without further ado, here's our conversation with Kimberly Moffitt, right after a quick word from our ND sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Endy, Canada's leading mattress brand, trusted by over 1 million happy sleepers. Now, we often think of sleep as a personal health habit, but it actually has massive impact on our relationships. From how patient we are with our partners to how emotionally present we feel, a good night's rest shapes how we connect. Endy is built to support these stronger relationships. Their thoughtfully designed mattresses feature breathable cooling gel foam and motion isolating layers that minimize disruption. So even if your partner is tossing and turning, you still get the quality rest you need. Because when you sleep better, you show up better for yourself and each other. Learn more at endy.com. That's ENDY.com. Welcome to the show. Oh my gosh, Kimberly, we are so excited to have you here. We've been following you for a little while and it's magical. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm so excited to have a discussion on something that I think is really important.
Well, and something that probably people don't talk about enough. Like, I'm very interested to hear what, you know, when as a relationship counselor, what people are coming in to see you and they're maybe damaged, they're struggling, they're snapping at each other, they feel disconnected. And I think that they're thinking it's, you know, because, you know, my husband's chewing too loudly or maybe he doesn't listen to me. But I feel like there's a lot of underlying things that a lot of couples probably aren't even aware of. So can we jump in and just jump in right there and talk about
Do it. Yeah,
yep, let's do it. Okay. So from all of your years of clinical work, what are some of the underlying factors that couples might not be thinking that could be impacting their relationship that are actually causing some of the friction that they're feeling?
Well, there's a lot of things I feel like when people come into our clinics at KMA. And so just for your knowledge as well, I don't personally work with clients anymore, but I did for many, many years. And now as the CEO of the company, I see like kind of the broad range of people's issues when they're coming in. And so it's actually really cool to be sitting in my seat because you get to see what issues are bringing in to therapy sessions and what are they talking about and at what age or what stage of life do certain issues appear. And so I have this database of like thousands of relationships and as well as correlating that with studies that I know about and things that I've seen happen over the years and trends. And so one thing, I mean, there's a number of things that impact people's quality of relationship over the years. Of course, things like and setting goals as a couple and making sure to spend time together, alignment on things like raising children and careers, those things as well. But something that doesn't get talked about very often is hormonal changes and sleep and how kind of the daily habits and daily changes in each person impact their temperament, their mood, and as a result, their relationship. And I think those things go very underplayed in terms of in our work in therapy, where if someone comes in and they don't have a good night of sleep, it kind of just destroys their ability to communicate. So so I know that today's topic was supposed to be sleep. And I know that I've just seen like sleep plays such an important role in Canadians' relationship lives. So.
Well, Fair. It's one of those things that you wake up in the morning, you think, oh, I didn't sleep. I'm having a bad day. But you don't really, I don't anyway. I don't normally think about how this is now going to impact everyone around me and the storm that I might be creating. So yeah, I think it's probably a much bigger issue than most people suspect.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I feel like a lot of people start complaining about sleep quality. And I mean, there's a lot of different things that impact sleep as well. Mm-hmm. So things like having babies and having schedule changes and, you know, one person's work being different than the other. And then as people age as well, and we, you know, with the topic of perimenopause as well, people's hormones change. So, you know, maybe they feel super hot in the night and they don't want to sleep in the same room as their partner, or one partner snores really loud and it's just impacting everybody's ability to sleep. Actually, that was like the number one thing in the Endy study. The snoring was like Canadians rated snoring as their number one sleep concern. And so that's why they ended up getting a sleep divorce. So a sleep divorce is when you decide to sleep in different rooms from each other.
Yeah.
I found that really, really interesting. And that's completely in line with what we see in clinical practice.
And sorry, what is this Endy study that you're referring to?
So it's actually a really cool study that was done by Endy Canada. They did a national survey that studied Canadians, and they wanted to understand more about Canadians' relationships and sleep habits. So the number one finding that they had was that 84% of Canadians believe that sleep is important to a relationship, which I think is really interesting, because I feel like 10 to 15 years ago, even in my own work, I don't think people would have said that at all. It's really surprising, right?
I would say it's important to my life, but again, I still wouldn't say it was important to my relationship, but yes, now that I think about it.
100%, yeah. And me as well. Like I feel like I fall apart if I don't sleep, and I sleep more than probably most people. I wake up at 9 o'clock in the morning and I have all kinds of help because I'm so sensitive, right? If I don't get a good sleep, I'm just a mess.
Yeah.
So I've always been really, like, I've really been proactive about that in my own life, but I just don't think people, like, over time have prioritized sleep. And now as people, I think there's been a collective waking up of people everywhere in terms of their health, their relationships, even other more broad topics, because of things like TikTok and the information that we have nowadays, which is really cool, because I think now people are saying, wow, actually sleep impacts my health overall and I might need to prioritize it. So
84% say that sleep is important. And was there any further questioning as to, of that 84%, are they doing anything about it? Do they know how to do anything about it? Or were there some top solutions?
So what we do know is that people felt it was important. We know what the top concerns are for Canadians. So snoring was number one, sleep preferences, like sleep disturbances, or something else, like kids walking in and things like that. Temperature was another really big one. Mm-hmm. Motion control. So if someone's like really like moving around a lot in the night, that was one of the main concerns. Andy brought me in to kind of give advice and talk about like how to deal with it. So that was really fun work to do, to be able to like give advice on TV programs and things like that about how to connect. Because I think what I see in practice is that this is actually quite an awkward topic. Like if you're not sleeping in your relationship for whatever reason, whether it's perimenopause or menopause or snoring, it's actually like quite uncomfortable to go to your partner and say like, look, you snore really loud and I can't sleep, right? As much as you might joke about it, to actually say, oh, I'm not going to sleep in the same bed as you. There's a sensitivity that we have.
I will tell you that this is exactly what happened in my relationship, where I would go to bed at night with my husband because he got upset otherwise. And then I would get up in the middle of the night and I would go to the other room. And I finally was like, but dude, like, babe, I love you, but this, like, now I'm inconvenienced every single night. And so I started sleeping in the other room, and now he's got a mouth guard that is magical and it stops the snoring. But he was really, really upset about it. And I didn't think anything of it. I just thought, oh, I'll just go sleep in the other room. It's fine. But yeah, it's interesting.
That is interesting. Is that common?
It's really common.
The upset around it. And I've had a sleep for several years now. Was the best thing ever. Although I think a reconciliation might be possible. I just got an Endy mattress of my own.
Oh, okay.
It's been amazing. And I'm actually thinking, okay, maybe we can, but I will say this, the number of people, like friends, acquaintances, when they find out, who are like, really? Is that, and almost wanting me to give them permission that it's okay. So sorry, I've
no, that is
practice, but is that common?
It's so common. And actually, for the same reason, I actually just got my parents an Envy mattress, and it was one of the hybrid ones with like the two, like, so it's basically like different on each side, because
yes,
and I was like, guys, you don't need to suffer. And it was the same situation. Like, my dad would leave in the middle of the night because he would be rolling around and didn't want to wake up my mom. And so finally I was like, guys, it's worth it. Like, just get it, you know, and you're like, your quality of life is so important. And so we did, and now they're really happy, and they're back in the same bed. So I think that what I can see from couples is an overwhelming desire to be in the same room, and a feeling of deeper connection when they are. Now, that's not to say if you're in separate rooms, like, it means anything about the quality of your relationship. But I think what we just see is deeper satisfaction when people find a way to actually be connected in that way. It's just something people enjoy.
I think I will say this. There are, in our busy lives, schedules, it's hectic. There's kids, there's whatever, you name it, it's probably happening. And there are not that many opportunities to find
quiet,
right?
Yeah.
And so I would definitely say that as much as both my husband and I are fine with the sleep divorce, and we're both terrible sleepers, so that's also a big part of it.
You're missing the pill.
Yeah,
exactly. It's those little conversations. It's the intimacy. It's the cuddling. It's all of those little things that I think we take for granted, and we just don't get those opportunities if we're in separate rooms. And so again, it's not like necessarily a bad thing, but it's just those key little moments that you miss. But I think the reason why this discussion is so important, though, is to remove the stigma and say, at the end of the day, like, a good quality sleep truly outweighs anything else. And if you're not good sleepers, like, sometimes, like, it's okay to say, look, we really need to just prioritize our sleep. And so but I think what people often miss is that middle point where they say, okay, we're just like, and truthfully, when I see couples, it's that they're so frustrated that they're not sleeping well together that one night they just throw in the towel. And it's usually in a really, like, heated, emotional, frustrated way. And they're like, I'm just not going to do it anymore. And then they're in separate beds from then, but they haven't had, like, the conversations, right? They haven't said, hey, I'm not sleeping. Like, what can we do about it? Like, what's the middle point where we can actually come up with solutions together? And so I think that's the conversation that needs to be happening, because sleep divorce is not the outcome that everyone has to have. It's more like, you know, that's one option, but there's other options too. So
yeah, it's funny because we had this moment. It was Christmas many, many years ago. And we had guests over. And so we didn't have beds available. And I was like, by like night three, I was like, you have to go sleep in the basement. I don't care. Like, it was just like, I was like, I'm done. I need to sleep tonight and you need to leave. And he literally went and slept in like a rickety old basement on like a rickety old couch. Cause I lost it. But
oh my gosh. And what's the issue that you have? Is it snoring? Is it moving around?
It's snoring.
Okay.
which is why the mouth guard has been very handy. But yeah, and I mean, I'm sure I get hot. I kind of whip covers back and forth. I'm sure that bothers him a little bit, but he tends to not complain as much. I also have a dog on the bed, so
oh.
I can't blame it all on him, but I can try. So
I actually, it's funny, I have a 7-year-old son. Like, my daughter's 12 and my son is 7, and I sleep in the same bed with my son. I'm a single mom. I've divorced a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And it's so cute because once in a while I'll get like a little foot in the face.
Yeah.
Can't be going on forever, but it's so cute.
So, like, cute.
I love that he's there. You know, I can hear him. I can hear his little snore, and I can hear his little, like, it's just so sweet that it is like, it's that feeling of being connected that I just love.
Yeah.
So a sleep divorce then, and as someone who's been doing this for a few years now, do you counsel against it? Is it how you get there that's important? Is it better to not? Like, do you have any advice or wisdom around, you know, people's sleeping arrangements in the context of your relationship?
I would say, like, for me personally, I don't counsel against anything. You know, for me, it's about, like, every couple is so different. it's all about what solutions are right for you. And in the end, everybody chooses something different, and the right thing might be different for each couple. So I try to caution against saying like there's one solution for everybody. I think it's about the way you get there. So like you said, I think it's about, you know, if you are having issues, it's way, way better to talk about them and say, how can we solve this together? It's just like anything else in life, whether it's your finances or your kids' schedules or your careers, you know, if there's something big and it means something to you and you want to make a change around it, you know, having the conversation and being able to be heartfelt about it. And I think if your partner truly cares about you, they're going to want to fix the issue. And so Michelle, your example was so good where it's like, oh, now he has a mouth guard and he did the things that are necessary, right, to make it happen. But I think, but not a lot of people are open to suggestions, right? Like, and this, to me, that's a red flag. Like if I'm working with a couple and one person says, I'm exhausted, I'm not sleeping, and the other one is like, deal with it. I think that's a relationship red flag. And that's to me showing that there's not like, you know, collaboration and compromise happening. So I always want to see that in the context of a healthy relationship. It's just people talking and making mm-hmm. sure that everyone feels heard and everybody feels safe.
I feel like there are a lot of couples though, or scenarios that I'm aware of where they just, it's hard to broach this topic, or there's someone is sensitive about, you know, something about their sleep habit being brought up, or they don't want to sleep in separate beds. Do you have conversation starters or tips or things that you suggest? And I'll just preface this by saying I recorded my husband's
Oh my God. Me too.
And he was like, I'm like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't advise that. That's just the kind of relationship we have. And it, you know, we're very open and honest, but I feel like there are a lot of people who probably need some help starting this conversation. Is that fair?
It's 100% fair. I think it's nerve-wracking. And then again, it's not just about how you communicate. There could be people that are excellent communicators, but in my opinion, because this topic is so taboo, like there is still some kind of stigma around it. I guess because we've heard our parents say, oh, you have to sleep in like the same bed to be a couple forever. And it's like this, you know, this idea that we have of like what a perfect couple or a perfect relationship means. And so anything that's outside of that, we think is abnormal, even if it's totally fine. You know, it's almost like we have to give ourselves permission. I think one stat that's really interesting from the Endy study is that 17% of Canadians already sleep in separate beds. So it's like, regardless of whether it's people are doing it anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's whether it's like voluntary, it's negotiated, or it just happens because they get fed up that it is happening, whether people like it or not. I think that if someone is struggling to talk to their partner about it, you could, I mean, there's different ways. I would suggest not being passive aggressive or not doing something that would make them feel bad about it, but rather, you know, sitting down for like, you know, some couples have meetings, some couples have like heart to heart talks over dinner. And they could say, this is really bothering me. I really want to fix it. And if your partner is serious about, you know, you and takes you seriously, I think that you can have a heart to heart conversation. Sometimes a therapist can help navigate those types of conversations because therapists, I mean, we see it all the time, right? So they are a little bit more skilled about normalizing, you know, just how normal this is among couples and saying, you know, lots of couples go through this, like, let's try some solutions that are right for you. And then I think that can help the person that's in, the person that's actively detracting from everyone's sleep. There's usually one out of the two. And so it can help that person like not feel guilty and just normalize what they're going through a little bit more.
We're giving away a $5,000 ND bedroom makeover. Bed frame, mattress, dressers, nightstands, all of it free. To enter, it's easy. Become a TIP insider on our Substack for just $7 a month. And follow ND on Instagram at ND Sleep or on Facebook at ND. The contest closes August 24th. It's for Canadian residents only. Sorry, guys. And there's a link in the show notes. So what are you waiting for? Go enter now. Seriously, like right now. Well, and it may not just be like sleeping. It may also be leading up to the sleep. So like my husband and I are really good at like, I'm going to bed. I'll go to bed too. But I know couples where the, you know, one of them goes to bed hours before the other and, you know, and then, or maybe they both go to bed and then one scrolls on their phone for hours. And my husband does that. But I have a mask, so I can ignore it. But you know, like there's so much around sleep that is problematic for couples.
Oh, there's so much. It's all in the little details. Cause it could exactly that. If someone's scrolling, for me, it would be like, I remember being married and if someone was in the bed and I knew that they were going to leave, I would be so anxious that I couldn't fall back asleep. It was gone. Cause I'd be like, when are they leaving?
When are they going? Go.
Such a weird thing. But like, for me, I was like, you need to get out now. Like, so it could be any little quirk, right? But I think the key is just being able to identify like, what is it that's really bothering me and how can we support each other? Cause sometimes it's just as easy as like a quick little fix. Right. And then everyone's sleeping again. So, so we notice that when people do start sleeping again, we can actually have more difficult and more productive conversations around just about anything. So
no kidding. I wonder, you know, I don't think I understood the impact that sleep deprivation had on me until perimenopause when it was atrocious. And then I was like, and then started understanding the impacts to my health and what have you. I'm wondering, you know, we both said at the start of our conversation that neither of us really considered what kind of partner sleep deprivation needs. Do you have any insights into, you know, what sleep deprivation or poor sleep does to your ability to be a good partner? Some things that, like, we know that we're maybe a little bit irritated or irritable and maybe, you know, not as sharp as usual, but are there other impacts?
Oh, it's a huge impact, not just to your mental health, but it's your ability to emotionally regulate. So triggers, like if you experience a trigger in your day-to-day life and you're sleep deprived, the trigger is 10 times stronger. So like your reaction to that trigger, it might not even be really who you are, but your reaction is like, you're not yourself when you're sleep deprived. And so, you know, whether it's you have babies, and I know I was extremely sleep deprived after my babies, and now also in perimenopause, like I'm in the beginning of my journey and just like exploring all of
these different things. Welcome.
I'm the seatbelt, baby. It's awesome.
And so, yeah, it's exactly that. I think the key is, no matter what the issue is, that, yeah, just being able to be open about it and talk about it and all those things.
Yeah. I often wonder, so I think this applies to sleep as well, but in the context of perimenopause, a lot of women go through a lot and the chaos is real and the challenges are real and the whole body impact is very significant. And where is the line between my partner needs to give me grace because I'm going through all of this and I'm just now a shitty partner, excuse my language. Right. And I wonder the same thing about sleep deprivation. Like where's the, you know, I don't know. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. You know, when do you say, hey, can you just give me some space? Cause I haven't slept in however long. And when am I just being a jerk and I need to bootstraps and figure it out. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
It makes
me very sleep deprived right now, by the way. I'm across.
She flew all night. She hasn't slept.
Yeah. So my apologies. I'm little.
Oh, you know what? No problem.
This is vodka. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I think that a lot of grace is necessary, but it's not just perimenopause. I think that marriage and life and long relationships, there are all kinds of reasons that we need to give our partners grace. And we need to say, it's like not who they really are. They're going through something. And menopause is one of those like really long journeys. And in my experience with just about any woman, whether it's in practice or friends or anything like that, it can take a while to kind of figure it out and to get used to it, or, you know, get on whatever meds or whatever program works for you. And so it's not like a band-aid solution or an overnight fix. It's something that can carry on for years, right? Until you feel better so I think it's totally okay to say, like, can you please give me a little grace here? I'm sleep deprived. I'm angry. And I honestly don't understand what's happening to my body. Like, a lot of this is hormones, right? It's the same, like, consider being pregnant, how that would impact your hormones, or if you're feeding your eggs, how you get all hopped up on hormones and everyone's all, you know, emotional. It's like, you have to understand that this is a major change happening to your body. And, you know, your moods are just going to happen accordingly, right? It's just a part of it. And so, I think part of the challenge with women, because you said, when am I just being a jerk? Like my answer to that is like, you're probably not being a jerk. I think as women, oftentimes we need to give ourselves more grace instead of less and just say like, actually, you know, I'm a pretty decent human being. I'm kind to everyone I encounter and I do my best. And that's really all I can do as a person. And yeah, anything beyond that is out of my control. And so I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to communicate the best I can. And that's just about it.
I think that's a light bulb for me. So I've been working with a coach through Portal, which is a new, relatively new online menopause.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. And the coach is fantastic. And the gist of what we've been working on is self-compassion. Mm-hmm. And it is, this is not something I'm very good at yet. And I'm working on it. But I will say my ability to be less reactive, to be better able to handle sleep deprivation like I am today, is so much more significant now that I am actively practicing self-compassion, which is something that it's taken 53 years, which is, I don't know if that's tragic, common, you know, all of the above. But yeah, I think you nailed it when you, right? If we can just realize that we're human and yeah.
Yeah. And that's fantastic. I think, but often I feel like with women, we're always told to put ourselves last and to say, and also because I think because menopause was so taboo for so long, it's almost like nobody knew what was going on and everyone was going through changes and nobody talked about it. And to say like something's wrong with me, as opposed to actually, this is something that literally every woman in the world goes through and it's medical and it's real and it lasts a long time. So to be able to say like, look, actually I can take a day off or I can, I love that word self-compassion. So it sounds like that's really helped you be able to say, hey, like I'm human, I'm okay. And this is actually a very normal thing that I'm experiencing and tomorrow will be a better day.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is probably a whole other podcast, but gray divorce. We haven't talked about this yet, and something I wanted to talk about for a while. Do you find that there's a surge of divorces amongst women in that perimenopause? Maybe not quite gray. Maybe we just color it.
You know what?
Is that a thing?
I haven't been asked that per se before in that way, but I do think that there's been, I don't want to say an increase in divorce. I think what I have seen over probably the last 5 or 6 years is there is definitely a wave of women who are waking up and saying, wow, I can't believe that the way society made me think about life and what the point of life was and the way I've structured my life is the way I actually carried it out. And what am I doing? Maybe this isn't for me. And so I think just with the rise of feminism and awareness about gender roles and things like that, and I think it's largely positive, right? You know, seeing people say, wow, I really want to take my life into my own hands and make decisions that are right for me, as opposed to what my family or what my grandmothers wanted me to do. And so I'm seeing a rise in that. And it's not just in marriages. Mm-hmm. Saying, you know, I want something else for myself or my life, but it's actually with young people as well in the way that they date and the way they approach relationships now. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that largely explains why a lot of young women today are remaining single, but also, you know, in the context of a relationship, deciding not to have children or not doing it in as traditional a way. And I kind of love that because I think, you know, if we can be more empowered as women and make choices that are right for us, I don't think that can be a bad thing.
I love that.
Well said.
What is the one thing you would love every woman to know about perimenopause, sleep? What is the one thing you want couples to know about their relationship and sleep?
If there was one thing, I would just want to normalize it and say it is very normal to have sleep issues in your relationship. Most couples do at some point. Like, and even that 17% of people that are sleeping in separate bedrooms, those aren't the only people having sleep issues, right? So I would say if you're having issues with your relationship and sleep, you're not alone, right? Like that's very, very important. But also, you know, if it's related to perimenopause, like you asked, I would just say like, you know, also that's very normal. And if anything, I think research and information is empowerment. So if you're going through something, just know like your feelings are never not valid. So if you're feeling something and you're feeling alone in it, talk to someone, ask, you know, I mean, with kids, especially now where young people, I just say, ask ChatGPT, you know, like, if you can't ask, just ask, right? Ask.
Yeah.
There's an answer. And if you're feeling it, it's usually not something wrong with you. It's usually you're feeling it for a reason. And the more you can like put that into words and find solutions, the more empowered you will be to take matters into your own hands. So that's probably the best answer, or that's the thing I would want people to know, is like everything is figure outable.
It was an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you. We've been really excited about this one, and I know that Endy was really excited to have you come on board, and it's been great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It was so nice meeting you guys and hearing your stories as well.
Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review,
so more women can find us and get a better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
This information is not intended as medical advice. The intent of this information is to provide the listener with knowledge to support more efficient and effective communication with their medical provider.